We're doing Koheles. We're up to what's called the 7th chapter, the 15th Pasuk. This is probably the most misunderstood Pasuk or two Pasukim in the whole book. The two Pasukim we're about to read. Let's begin. Shlomo HaMelech says, you guys got the place? Et hakol ra'iti bimei hevli. I've seen everything in this lifetime, says King Solomon. Yeish tzadik oved betzitko. I've seen someone righteous, and he gets lost. In all his righteousness, nonetheless, he's banished from the world. You see him doing everything right and suffering. V'yeish rasha. And then you see people who are wicked. Marich berato. And in spite of their wickedness, so then they have longevity. So, what's going on? Shlomo HaMelech says, what's going on? So, we could read this as a question. We could read it as a statement, right? Be prepared. Let's read the next pasuk, and then let's analyze both, okay? Technically, we don't yet know what Shlomo is saying, but maybe if the two or three psukim are connected, we'll have a little bit of an insight. So Shlomo says, "Al tehi tzadik harbe ve'al titchakam yoter." Don't be too righteous. Wow, what does that mean? And don't be too smart. Shlomo says, "Lama tishomem." Why should you be desolate? "Al tirsha harbe ve'al tehi sachal." Don't be too wicked, and don't be stupid. Lama tamut belo itecha? Why should you die when it's not the right time? Tov asher techoz bazeh vegam mizeh al tanach et yadecha. You know, a good idea is to have a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Kirei Elohim yitzei et kulam. Because someone who's God-fearing will cover it all. What's going on here? Just be a little bit wicked? Is that what Shlomo HaMelech just said? Don't be too pious. What's going on here, right? So that's why I said this cluster of psukim are probably the most misunderstood and misquoted psukim in the whole book. So what's going on? Let's see. There are different interpretations here. And we'll try to see them one at a time. If you have time, there's a website, 123torah.com. You guys probably heard of it. So we have over there a series that we studied here, a book called Sefer Maasiyot, Book of Stories. Not the famous Sefer Maasiyot by Rav Nachman of Breslov, but rather Sefer Maasiyot, a far less famous work, written by Rav Nisim Gaon 2 millennia ago, more ancient. And in this book, Rav Nisim Gaon puts together stories, some from the Talmud, some from the Medrash, some from Jewish tradition. And through these stories, he is building a philosophy. He is creating, he is trying to explain, how are we supposed to view the world? You look at the world and you see suffering. How do you deal with it? One of the first questions he tackles is, why are children born with disabilities? So he's tackling difficult philosophical questions. And we have to wonder whether his goal was to placate the masses or to really delve into and answer the question deeply. We know that this question was posed by Eov, who probably preceded King Solomon. The question was posed by the prophet Habakkuk towards the end of the period of the First Temple. And it was posed by Moshe Rabbeinu. And there are conflicting opinions in the Talmud as to whether Moshe got an answer to the question. Remember, Moshe asks God, "Show me your honor." And our sages say what he was asking for is an understanding. Why is it that sometimes good people suffer and sometimes they don't? And sometimes wicked people have it good and sometimes they don't. And Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, I don't see a system. I look at the world. I don't get it. Sometimes I see it run this way, sometimes that way. What's going on? And then the Talmud has two opinions as to whether he got an answer or not. One opinion is that God says, you ain't going to understand until you die. Come up here, we'll talk. But for now, you got to deal with it. So that's an answer too. And that goes back to our class last week, where we discussed the fact that I don't understand why he does something doesn't preclude his existence. Those are two different questions, understanding a system or not. But let's see over here, we'll see how some commentaries learn that Shlomo HaMelech is actually answering that question, and others learn that no, he's not. And part of it is the question of, do you read this as a statement or as a question or something else? So let's see. Yes, Yechiel.
What do you want to say when you say understanding? What does it mean? Because you can't put the system and you understand the mechanism in your perception about the system. It's a pedagogical, it's a data. What means understand? How deep or what you're looking for?
I agree. That needs to be defined. Right. That's why I said last week that if you're going to talk about Gilgulim, so that can only work after you've bought into the system. So then you could give any answer, technically. Any answer that makes sense. Right. Okay. Okay, so let's see.
Is he talking about, like, Kaddish and Kol? When he's talking about, like, Tzaddik and Rashi?
What do you mean?
Like, when he's saying, like, don't be too much of a Tzaddik, he's saying don't spend too much time on this non-worldly level, balance the two between between what the world that you are in and the world that you're elevating into.
Let's see. Let's go one commentary at a time. So, et hakol ra'iti b'me'evli. I've seen everything in this lifetime. Yesh tzadik oved b'tzidko. I've seen that there are righteous people that, in spite of their great righteousness, or maybe because of their great righteousness, they get lost. Look at Moshe Rabbeinu. He had a fantastic individual, and then he does a small sin. And God says, on your level, that's very grave. So he is a tzaddik, someone very righteous, oved b'tzidko. And his righteousness causes him, to some degree, to get lost. Meaning he is held to a higher accountability. 2 years ago, we were studying this in shul, and someone blurted out and said, heck, I'm not going to be a tzaddik. I don't know if you guys were there. It's like, so we have to understand that there's a lot of benefits. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu had the best life in the world. He wouldn't have traded it for anything. And I'm not talking about the world to come. I'm talking about this world. Meaning there's an element where a person is fortunate enough to be in a position where they can impact others, where they could learn, where they could teach, where they could help the Jewish people be propelled forward, where they could stand forward, and then they could pray when there's a decree against the Jewish people. So Moshe valued every living moment. But there's a certain responsibility that comes with that position. You know, it's like the guy who works with dynamite. He loves the thrill, but you understand that one small mistake and it's life-threatening. Okay, so he wants the job, he understands the value in what he's doing, he realizes that the smallest mistake makes a huge difference. So Moshe Rabbeinu, you have a tzaddik, yesh tzaddik, you have someone who's tremendously pious, and they'll get all the wages for it. But because they're flying at lightning speed, so then oved b'tzidko, sometimes that lightning speed is detrimental to a person. A person can be very, very great, but that only means that sometimes what they do is going to carry much, much, much more weight. The Yesh Rasha, and I've seen, says Shlomo HaMelech, wicked people that are ma'arich b'ra'ato, that they keep doing evil, and they keep on living out life. It's as though their wickedness ensures longevity. So Shlomo HaMelech says, yeah, sometimes wicked people are given that capacity to live out their life because God wants to finish off whatever good they've done, let them reap the benefits in this world and finish it off there. So that's one of the answers that Rav Nissim Gaon quotes in the book. Rav Nissim Gaon quotes a story that's quoted in the Medrash. The Medrash says there were once two friends. Big tzaddikim. They learned together all the time and they were always doing mitzvos together and they made a deal. First one to die comes back to the other one in a dream and tells them what's happening in the world to come, right? So, one day, one of them got very sick and came the time that he passed away. So he died a little bit young and they schedule a funeral for him. And the time of the funeral comes and no one shows up. The whole town, no one shows up to honor this guy. And his only his best friend comes. and he has the poorest of funerals and eulogies, and the reason no one showed up is because there was a wicked tax collector in town who was, he would beat everyone up, and his son died. And everyone was scared that if they didn't show up to his son's funeral, so then he'd hold it against them. So no one dared show up to this pious person's funeral. Everyone was at the tax collector's son's funeral. And the tax collector and his son were both horrible people. And his friend couldn't get back to Beis Medrash, couldn't get back to learning. When after he saw that, he said, we worked a whole life together. And the day he dies, he gets no respect. And he's pacing back and forth, and he can't walk back into the Beis Medrash, and tries to open a safe, and he can't. And he's just perturbed. Shiva isn't enough for him. He's finished. Until finally he has a dream. And his friend comes to him in a dream and says, hey, take it easy. It's not what you think. So he says, really, tell me what's going on. So he says, look, there's a logic behind what happened in this world. The tax collector and his son, they once made some kind of simcha, some kind of, they invited everyone over. And the occasion was canceled at the last minute. So they were left with a ton of leftover food because they had initially invited all the nobles and they were going to make this big party. And then it was canceled. So they had all the food. They didn't want to throw it out. They declared in the city that all the poor are welcome to come and eat. And they fed all the poor of the city one meal. And in heaven, they said, we have to pay them back. You know, they did feed the poor once. They didn't mean to do the mitzvah. They just had extra food. They didn't know what to do with it. But at the end of the day, they did a mitzvah. They accomplished something. So in heaven, they said, we got to pay everyone back before he dies. We don't want him to come up here and have a claim against us. So they ensured that he, on the day he died, everyone came out and he got the honor and his father got the honor and he's finished. I see what's going on with him up here. And when it comes to me, there was something minuscule. Someone once came, I don't remember the details of the story. He was in between the blessings of Shema, and maybe a poor person came in, I don't remember what, and he was a little bit lenient in answering the guy in between the blessings. And they said, you spoke, we don't want you to come up here, and you'll have that one slight sin held against you. You're going to pay it off on the day you die. So I didn't suffer anything, you know, I came up to heaven. But in that regard, I paid off my debts. And now, believe me, I'm better off up here than I was down there. Believe me, it was worth it. I'm very happy they worked that way on my behalf. So then he wakes up and he's calm and he could go back to life. So that's perhaps one answer. Again, some commentaries learn the book of Job, that's the answer to the book of Job. That at the end of the day, if the world is only about this world, so then you're right. It doesn't seem to be a system. You can't understand what's going on. If there's another world, so then you can understand that there's more to the system, more to the calculations. And even though someone might have to go through a difficult time in this world, there's still what to talk about in the world to come. And that, according to, and that's the simple reading of the Gemara in Baba Basra, that says that Eov erred because he assumed that everything ends at the end of this world. He says, just as this happens, so too the person who dies ain't ever coming back. He figures that's it. It's the end of the world when a person dies. If you view the world that way, then you have really big questions. So that's one answer.
At first glance, it seems a little bit difficult to understand that Roshayim would do mitzvot, to do good things. Their sechar is supposed to be in the world to come, but they get it here. How could it be enough what they receive in this world to make up for what they would have gotten in the world to come? How can you compare?
I don't know how the system works, but I do know the story of Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa. His wife says, it's been too tough living this poor life. And he says, fine, if you want it, I'll ask. And then from heaven they give him a gold, right? You know the story? A gold leg. A gold leg of a table. You guys know the story? Okay, so the Medrash says he was very, very poor. And he and his wife were very, very pious. And one day his wife says, enough. I can't handle this anymore. He says, fine. So he prays, and a hand comes out from heaven and gives them a gold leg of a table. So now they're rich. They're going to sell it, and they're going to be rich. So they go to sleep that night, and his wife wakes up in the middle of the night and says, Hanina, give it back. So he says, what do you mean? What happened? She says, I had a dream. He says, what'd you dream? She said, I dreamt of the world to come. And I saw a bunch of tzaddikim. They're all sitting on tables with four legs. And ours only has three. I don't want that. I'm going to come there. Everyone's going to see. I'm the lady that has three legs on her table because I couldn't hack it. No, tell them to take it back. I don't want this. So he prayed and a hand came and took it back. And the Talmud says it was a bigger miracle that a hand took it back than that they gave it. Because from heaven, they like to give. They don't take back. No returns, right? No return policy. In heaven, they're about giving. Which is, by the way, an interesting idea. Rav Ram Shapiro once gave a lecture to visiting rabbis from Chutz La'aretz. And in the lecture, he spoke to them about how the land of Israel makes the person a more spiritual person, and the Torah you learn when you're here is going to be so much greater than what you learn in Chutz La'aretz. And he gave them this whole speech about the greatness of living in Israel and learning Torah in Israel. So they're all excited. And then a day before they fly back, they come back to him. He's the chief rabbi of Israel. They say, Rabbi, that was all great, but now we got to go back to Chutz La'aretz. Now what? What do we do now? We can't leave our congregations and... what do we do? So he said, he quoted to them this Gemara. He said, you see, in heaven they don't take it back. So if you attain that spirituality, I guess you'll be able to take some of it back with you when you go back to Chutz La'aretz. So coming back to here, you do see in numerous places that in some way a person can take from their merits in the world to come and benefit in this world. We'll see it in next week's parasha. Katonti, I have been diminished, possibly, says Yaakov Avinu. Mikol ha-chasadim u-mikol ha-emet. You see, Avraham Avinu also calculated that way. After the war against the four kings, Avraham Avinu says, maybe I have no merits left. Meaning, a person's merits can speak on their behalf in the world to come. They can also speak on their behalf in this world. And that's... I don't know how the system works, but there is such a concept where a person can use up their merits in this world. And certain worldly benefits in this world come by detracting the world to come. About Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa, the Gemara says, he was the only one who could stand on his own two feet and didn't need a heavenly blessing, so to speak, in order to make ends meet. Kav Charuvim, yeah. It seems like we can live off of the merits of the world to come. Exactly how the system works, I don't know. I don't know, you know, like how many brownie points does it take to get, you know, what? I don't know. So let's just finish. This is one interpretation in these verses. This is what we might call a classical interpretation in the verses, that yesh tzadik oved betzidko, sometimes a person can be pious, and that piety will hold him to a higher standard where he'll ultimately be lost because of it. V'yesh rasham arich b'ra'ato, sometimes a person is wicked, and specifically because of that, they grant them longevity from above. Al tehi tzadik harbe. Don't be too pious. In other words, there are areas where the Torah said it's permissible. And a person says, no, I'm going to take a step back. Like the guy who says, I want a fleishik and a milchik and a parv toothbrush. Why? Right? You guys know the examples. So there are all kinds of things where a person says, but I want to be more pious. People call up before Yom Kippur and they say, I want to fast. But the halacha says you're not allowed to fast in certain circumstances. A guy has a heart condition. Doctors say that if he fasts, he could die. He says, I want to fast. What are you talking about? Alti tzadik harbe. Don't go beyond the call of duty. There are areas where going beyond the call of duty is not Judaism. Don't go too far. And you have that all the time. A person told me, okay, I don't want to quote, it's a true story. It's too fresh. There are continuously stories where people go too far. A guy says, you know, my daughter might marry this Esav. So I'll put her in a basket. Okay, but I'm going to put nails in the basket. What'd you put nails in the casket for? So you put her in a box. Esav doesn't see her. What do you gain by putting nails in the casket? I mean, Yaakov Avinu takes a step beyond, and he pays the price for it. His daughter ends up going out to see the guys, or the girls, and the guys. And she ends up being taken forcibly. We know the end of the story. So Chazal say, you want to take a step away from the cliff, take one step, you know? You take 20 steps, you might not see you're falling off the other side of the cliff. There's a limit. Alti tzadik albei. Even when it comes to how pious and how distant we are from a sin, there's a range, and that range is normal. You guys know the story about the guy who took his son to be brought up on an island, right? He wanted his son to be super pious. So he didn't want the son to see any girls, right? So he takes him on an island, and the kid grows up, and he's learning Torah, and everything's in the greatest piety and purity. So the guy turns 18. He says, I've got to bring him to the mainland. So they come to the mainland. They start walking on the street, and the kid looks across the street, and he sees a woman. He says, Dad, what's that? So his father says, that's a special type of goat. So the kid looks at it, and he says, Dad, could you get me a goat like that? Oh, wow. What's going on? You go too far. You're not going to change the nature of man. You're going to create abnormalities. Alti tzadik arbe. Shlomo HaMelech says, don't go too far. You want to ensure you're maintaining the Torah? You take one step back. There's a rule how far a person should go, even when he's protecting the Torah. And people tend to go too far. And they don't realize, my father has a saying, life is like a sponge filled with water. You can carry it gently. You can start squeezing. When you squeeze, you're confident that you have one side of the sponge, but you don't realize you're losing water on the other side of the sponge. So there's a certain balance. And people do it in their homes and in their education too. You stress one thing too much, okay, you'll get that, but you might lose things on the other front. Alti tzadik arbe. Shlomo says there's a certain balance, and you gotta walk within that balance. Chazal say, where do we find someone transgress this pasuk? Alti tzadik arbe. King Saul. God tells him, you gotta kill the people of Amalek. And then Doeg HaDomi comes to King Saul and gives him a whole logic about why he shouldn't. Why it must be, you know, it says, Avuv no, it says, you can't kill an animal and its child on the same day. Certainly you shouldn't kill Agog and his son on the same day. Hold on to him, leave him alive one day. Yeah, the whole story of Purim, the threatened annihilation of the Jewish people, time and again, that's all because he waited that day. The prophet told him what to do. But he thought, maybe, you know, there is a mitzvah. Maybe I could apply it here. Maybe I could go a step further. You know, if you find one person dead, you do a whole irani dachas, a whole egla rufa over one person that was found murdered. I'm going to go killing out a whole city here? He went too far. Not that much later, King Saul himself orders to have an innocent city all murdered. The Torah gave you balance. If you could maintain within that balance, you'll be right. If you try to go too far, you'll find yourself losing on both fronts. So that's the classical example the Talmud gives us, the Medrash gives us, an al tehi tzadik harbe. Yeah?
It's not better to talk, to change a little bit, and register either way. Mm-hmm. I mean, say, like, don't be so pious, so tzadik. It's not better to say, don't look yourself like being tzadik. So it's just his imagination there. I mean, Hashem says, kill Amalek, and he's looking at the power, oh, I must be to love, and so, that it's wrong. He's just imagining that he's tzaddik, actually.
Beautiful. You said Rashi almost verbatim. And the key over here is, what does the word tehi mean? Rashi Bemet says what you just said. Rashi says, King Saul imagined he was being pious. That's what I wanted to ask you, the way we're reading the verse. What does it mean to be very pious? If the word tzaddik comes from the word tzedek, from righteousness, to do what's right, can you be very right? Can one plus one be more than two? Can you be more right than two? Rav Monk, righteous, not pious. I mistranslated. The word is righteous. Rav Monk, when he was teaching high school, he used to like asking his students, how could a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu have a brother who was as wicked as Korach? How could such a thing be? And inevitably one student would raise his hand and say, you know, he wasn't his brother, he was his cousin. So Rav Monk would say, that's one answer, and who has another answer? You know, that was a joke. I mean, but the idea is, sometimes when you got the right answer, you don't need another answer. So you're talking about a tzaddik. A tzaddik does what's right. There's no more right than being right. You want to talk to me about being a chassid, being extra pious? There I could hear there are levels of piety. But you want to talk about a tzaddik doing what's right? There's one right. There's one bad. Alti tzadik harbei, so that's taking the tzidkut and going to the harbei. It's not very righteous. It's don't be righteous, very. Meaning taking it beyond the level of being righteous. You're right. You're correct in your point. It's not called being extra righteous. It's not. It's taking the concept and taking it to an extreme, or taking it beyond the balanced approach the Torah wanted. The al titchakam yoter. And this is the great problem that we can always rationalize. Man is the great rationalizer. That's why man can worship anything. Because you can explain, you know. Ever since I started worshiping that, my ingrown toenail got better, you know. Must be it's God. We can rationalize a lot of things. Al titchakam yoter. Shlomo Amar says, don't work so hard at rationalizing. Because you can get everywhere through that. Lamati shomem. Because Shlomo Amar says, the bottom line is, when a person goes too far and he says, I'm going to be extra pious, he ends up destroying himself. People won't be able to connect to him. A person has to choose a path that works in society. It's very strange. You read the first Mishnah in the second chapter of Tractate Avos. Rebbe, the leader of the Jewish people, he says, how do you choose a path? Rebbe Omer, Ezei derech yishara shiavo lo ha'adam. How do you choose a straight path? Okay, I'd say take a laser beam, figure it out. You got straight, you know. Figure it out. Go with Maimonides, figure the extremes, get the median, the golden path. There are many ways to get the straight path. That's not what Rabbi says. Kol shi'tiferet lo se'a. First of all, you, the one who's living the path, do you find it to be a glorious path? Do you think this makes sense? Do you think this is great? V'tiferet lo min adam. But there's a step two that Rabbi says. How does everyone else look at you? If everyone else is saying you're the nut, so either choose a different community or realize that you got a problem. But you can't do both. If you think it's beautiful, but the world thinks you're crazy, you got a problem. That's not the path. Rebbe says, you want to choose a path? Look at what the world is saying too. You can't just choose what you think is right. Shlomo HaMelech says, Lama tishomim? If you're going to go too far, why should you do something that ends up making you into a hermit? Yeah, I'm right. The world's crazy, but I'm right. Okay? Yeah.
It was like what Abraham did, though. I don't understand the...
So if you look at the Midrash and the Rishonim on Lech Lecha, it says that that's why Hashem told him to go to Canaan. Because the land affects the people, and the land breeds spirituality. And in Canaan, he would not be viewed as crazy. You're right. It's exactly why God told him, why are you beating a dead horse? You're not going to get anywhere here. Leave. Right. Sometimes you have to choose the right community, you know. There are communities where if you start keeping Shabbos, they say you're crazy. So we said, you can't just leave it at what does the world say. You got to choose the right community. But within the right community, you also got to be normal.
How was the Canaan right?
I didn't hear you.
How was the Canaan right?
That's what you see, that he had a following with the Nefesh. They had a following in Haran, and then they had a greater following, a greater impact in Canaan. Yeah?
So, would that make converts crazy? Because, like, you know, they're secular, maybe Gentile, I don't know, whatever, surroundings say, you know, you're definitely crazy. Then you go to a rabbi, and rabbi's like, listen, man, like, you don't really have to do this. And then you're like, no, I don't want to do it. And the rabbi's like, you're putting yourself at risk. And then you're like, no, I really want to do it. And then the rabbi's like, okay. So, like, you know, it doesn't matter who you go. You can go to, like, the most extremely pious rabbi and he'll still...
Right, but I think you know the answer to that. Meaning the first step with a convert is that we don't encourage converts. It's not because we really think what they're doing is wrong. There is an intrinsic danger. There, you know, there's still anti-Semitism in the world, and there's also the fact that once you moved in, you can't move out. From our perspective, once a Jew, always a Jew. So it's fair to the convert to put him on the spot and say, this is not a good idea. Because in many ways, it's not a good idea. But obviously, we do see the value and the truth in what we're doing. And again, you go to the right community and you're not seen as crazy. A lot of it is a question of where you're going to be. That's why we said choose a path and then either switch communities or switch out of the path. But you can't stick to a path where the whole world is going to look at you and say you're crazy. Shlomo Amar says, we went from Shlomo to the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. I think in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, which is what you're focusing on, there's another answer, but that's not our focus here. Coming back to Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo says, if you're going to go too far, you're going to find yourself separate from everyone. So people say, I can't trust anyone's kashrus. Great, so you end up eating alone your whole life, right? People make a kiddush, you can't eat. People invite you over, you can't go. You want to invite people over, you have to start wondering, but maybe they'll bring something, and then I won't know what to do, and I won't know what to say. Okay, so there's a realm, right? You know, we sometimes invite people who grow their own food. So I tell them, please don't bring your food. I respect you, I love you, I'm willing to eat other things, but if you're going to bring me your homegrown nana, which I have to assume that you know how to check, I don't want it. I'm not interested. I respect that you do it. I don't want to do it. Not everyone takes the time to really learn how to check nana. Okay, fine. You can have a range where you say, okay, this is what the halacha wants of me, and within that range, I can live. And you go to a kiddush, you'll see, I saw big rabbis eating at kiddushim. I saw, I'll tell you a story afterwards when we're off the record. Remind me to tell you a story about Rav Moshe Feinstein. Okay, back to our, back to Koheles. So Shlomo HaMelech says, don't take things too far. Al tirsha harbeim v'al tehi sachal. Now, there's one commentary here that we won't go into, which maybe you guys will tell me we should, and then maybe after the break we'll bring it and we'll go into it. I'm just going off on a tangent for 1 second, okay? Who was this book written for, the Book of Koheles? So we're learning it from a Jewish perspective. But we should just be aware that the Netziv, in his commentary, says that this book was written in Sukkot. This book was read, in Sukkot. And the reason it was read in Sukkot in the days of the temple was because all the way back to the days of the temple, the non-Jews would come and bring sacrifices on Sukkot. Just as the prophet says would happen in the future, it happened in the past. And King Solomon would have this read publicly for the nations. The Book of Koheles is written as a philosophical work analyzing different attitudes to life, and it seems very irreligious. You read the Book of Koheles, it's probably the most irreligious book in Tanakh. Every other book either has the storyline of Job or has a bottom line. This is what God wants. You open the Book of Koheles, it seems like, boy, maybe this, maybe not. But what's going on? Shirim, you have to understand, you're right. That's a good point. But the Netziv writes in his introduction, this book was written for the non-Jews as well. And so it was read publicly, and the non-Jews would ascend to the temple, and then they'd start hearing these speeches about philosophy. And that's why it's written in a way that gives you room to ponder. Whatever religion you're in, Shlomo HaMelech is addressing you, and he's saying, look, life can go this way, life can go that way, and if we're going to read it with the Netziv's interpretation, so then the psukim flow very nicely. You know, he's talking to the Zulu tribe, he's talking to the Aztecs, he's talking to every type of religion, and he's saying, you want to be so pious. I've seen people burning their kids in the name of piety. I've seen all kinds of things in the name of piety. Don't take things too far. You know, if I'm going to read it as a non-Jew, Shlomo's telling you, don't be too pious. Yes, because piety can mean many things in different cultures. So we're not going to go that route. On a different occasion, we should learn the Netziv as one commentary on the whole book, and then we'll analyze it from that angle. But those of you who want can join us in Kochav Yaakov. On Sukkos, every year we learn another section with the Netziv. Going back to the commentaries we are reading here. So, Pasuk Yud Zayin, we're going with the first interpretation. Al tirsha harbe. The word tirsha could mean to be wicked, but the word tirsha could also mean to be scared. It says about King Saul, Uvechol asher yifnei yarshia. Any direction King Saul would turn, he'd make people tremble. So the word tirsha could mean al tirsha harbe. Don't be too scared. If something happens, sometimes part of being a God-fearing person is that a person is cautious. Shlomo HaMelech says, don't be too cautious. Ve'al tehi sachal. The flip side of it is, don't be stupid. Sometimes people say, I'm not scared. Sure, I can drive after I've drank. Sure, I can drive without a seatbelt. So what if the speed limit is this? I can do that. Lama tamut b'leitecha? Why should you die young? Why should you do things that people die from them? There's a certain amount of concern you should have, and a certain amount you shouldn't have. What's right is take a little bit of caution, take a little bit of boldness, balance them. A God-fearing person knows to balance both. When he should have confidence and charge forward, when he should be concerned and be cautious, you got to know how to balance it. I walked into the bathroom, the story is about 15 years old. It was the month of Teves, or Shvat. And I'm about to walk out of the bathroom, and I see a gun, a little handgun, just above the seat. I pick it up, and I say, boy, it's too early for Purim. I forgot what country I'm in. And my finger goes on the trigger. Now, bathroom's a small place. You don't have too much place to move. I didn't even realize I'm facing my head. And my finger's on the trigger, and I said to myself, you know, I haven't shot one of these cap guns in years. Then I said to myself, but it's not mine. I can't shoot it. You know, I have to go announce it. Lucky thing for me, it was a revolver. You know, this looked identical to a cap gun with those twirly thingies in the middle, right? Someone had really left their revolver with live bullets in the bathroom, and it was loaded. And this was a guy who traveled. It was in the Second Intifada. He traveled in a place where he was shot at sometimes, and he traveled with it loaded. He was on his way out, and he had to go to the bathroom, so he didn't want to drop out of the holster. He put it down, and when he left, he forgot it there. So you hold the gun, and you say, can I shoot? Okay, no, you can't. I didn't know the first thing about a handgun. It didn't even cross my mind until a second later when I said, no, take your finger out of the holster, what's it called? Out of the trigger, right? Take your finger out of the trigger, this might be a real gun. And it was, and it might be loaded, and it was. So you'd say, why don't you pull the trigger and find out? Just aim at a harmless place. No, Shlomo HaMelech says there's a balance. Sometimes you got to be cautious, sometimes you got to be brave, and you got to balance the two. And you say, no, I got to keep it balanced. Tova shotechoz bazeh. So that's the first, I'd say, most basic interpretation in the Psukim, which presents a certain philosophy, which many people espouse. The philosophy of Olam HaBa is the answer to all the questions, and this does not go in line with what we said, that Moshe Rabbeinu remained with the question. This is the approach that most people will tell you is Judaism's approach, and this definitely exists in Chazal and among our sages, that's the answer. There's a world to come, and there's a Cheshbon, and God has His way of measuring and doling things out. And when Shlomo HaMelech said, don't be too pious, like Yechiel pointed out, that it's not that you're really being too righteous, it's that you're going beyond the call of duty. So that's one interpretation. You guys want to go for another one or two? Or should we just move on? Yes? Yes? Thank you. I'm also glad to be here. Yeah, I didn't know. You know what strikes me is that imagine, God forbid, had I pulled the trigger. What would people have said? He didn't seem suicidal. You know? It's true. You know, I'm saying, what could people have said? How did he get his hands on that gun? And how did he do it without? He seemed so happy. Like, it struck me afterwards. You know, what would the headlines have been? Yeah. Even his friends in yeshiva didn't know.
He seemed so normal.
You're right.
It's always the quiet ones.
Yeah. How old was I? I don't know. He must have been 22, 21.
No,
yeah.
No way.